You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 351. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name's Adam White, sitting here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario, recording for you, the Punk News Podcast listener, on this, the first step in a 50-episode journey to our next ill-advised episode full of nonsense. So welcome to, I don't know, welcome to the beginning.
Of the end?
Of the end? I don't know. It's not really of the end. But anyways, yeah, so hi.
Of more asinine bullshit.
Joining me on tonight's show, we have Mr. John Gentile. Hey, John.
You know, Adam, you mentioned only 50 episodes away from 400, but I'm already thinking about the Christmas episode, and we've already done making fun of, who's the guy?
A Christmas Carol?
Who's the guy Dickens? That always sings? Chestnuts Roasting on Open Fire. What's that guy?
Oh, Bing Crosby.
We've already done the Bing Crosby special. We've already done the Christmas pageant, and we've already done a play. I don't know what there's left to do for a Christmas special. Another play, or who knows? I really don't know, and I don't know if we're going to do a Christmas special this year, or maybe it'll be lower key than the past year, because I don't know how I can top Christmas special 2016.
We could have like a very goth punk news Christmas. I don't exactly know what that means.
The end of it, we all light ourselves on fire.
Susie and the Banshees or something. So anyways, also joining me, Mr. Tom Trauma. Tom,
what's
hey,
up, guys?
We missed you on 350.
You know, I have so many adult obligations. It's really cutting into my ability to do this nonsense, but I'll try harder in the future.
Okay, so we are going to kick off this week's episode with a whole shit ton of mail, because there's been lots, and we keep having goofy nonsense episodes where we don't actually read mail, and we probably should. So, John, you actually have access to the mail. I have no idea what you are intending to do here. So do you want to kick us off?
Let's kick it off. We've got a lot to cover this week, so we'll kick it off. And Adam White, if we go too long, then cut me off. We actually have a point and counterpoint mail, and neither submitters knew they were doing a point and counterpoint battle. So I'll read them both, and then you two can respond. This is from staffer Sean, who, despite being a staffer, still writes into the Punk News Podcast. Hi, everyone. I have an angry letter. I don't think I've written an angry letter since John said no one likes death grips. But I'd like to weigh in on your conversation about the Riot Fest lineup. I don't really care about your coverage of the Jawbreaker reunion. If you're not a huge fan, it's understandable that you wouldn't be all too worked up about it. My issue was your attitude towards the rest of the lineup and how it pretty much had become a mainstream rock fest. The comment about Lollapalooza hit the hardest. Tom reminisced about on the fest lineups used to be geared solely towards punk audiences and how they didn't used to have all this alternative filler crap. And he's right about that. But those weren't the lineups with the Replacements and Samhain. The lineup Tom was referring to was my first Riot Fest in 2013, and he seems to have conveniently left out that year's headliners, Fall Out Boy and Blink-182. Those were...
Yeah, I conveniently didn't watch them.
Those were the two bands I went for, and I have no problem admitting that, because what else would you expect a suburban Sean preteen to do? Riot Fest was a turning point for me. I was drawn in by the shitty radio rock acts, but caught no effects in the space between them in 2014, which prompted me to dive into the fat back catalog, and that shaped my music taste into what it is today. The point of my story is that I can personally attest to the importance of bands like the Bad Brains to be sharing the stage with Taking Back Sunday and Newfound Glory. You can talk all you want about how the real punks will be going to $8 DIY shows that night, but without entry points like Riot Fest, I have a feeling that those shows would be noticeably emptier. Also, can you seriously tell me if the Bad Brains, GBH, X, Squar, and the Buzzcocks played a show in your town, you wouldn't go? Signed, Sean. And then here's the counterpoint from Neil. But
Man, I want a counterpoint, well, but
and,
I guess
and
I'll
here's
wait.
Neil, and this is Liverpool Neil, and he didn't know Sean's point, so it's interesting that they're taking opposite sides. Hello, chaps. Liverpool Neil here, and I have some angry venting to do. Youngsters, leave the room and cover your ears now. F Riot Fest. There, is that clear enough? Every year that monstrosity gets bigger and bigger, lamer and lamer, and shittier and shittier. And the annoying thing is that it used to be great. Some background. Originally, Riot Fest was a one-day punk ska oi psychobilly event at the Congress Theater in Chicago. The first one was in 2005. Dead Kennedys, Dickies, Angry Samoans, Misfits, Germs, Agent Orange, and the Effigies were all there. Second one saw the reformation of the Naked Ray Gun along with 7 Seconds, The Business, The Toasters, The Effigies, and Youth Brigade. The next year's events were still inside but expanded to 2 and then 3 days but were still punk rock shows. But then in 2011, it all changed. I guess they saw how big Lollapalooza had become, so they decided to sell their souls and change it from a punk rock show to an alternative festival. It has been all downhill since then. Sure, they throw in the token core band to keep in their street cred, but when you have dog shit like Gogol Bordello and Coheed and Cambria getting much higher billing than legends like the Buzzcocks, then you know the whole thing sinks to high heaven. It's a disgrace. If they want a mainstream festival, fine. Just don't call Riot Fest. And the lineup this year is the worst yet, times 100. Jawbreaker, better name it would be Joy. A better name would be Joybreaker because they drive me to despair every time I try to listen to them. So yeah, don't get me started on
this Neo guy's really growing on
so
me,
yeah, don't get me started on Riot Fest. Tom, come to Moto Blah in June instead. All right, enough venting from me, chaps. Love the show. That? Stay sharp.
Neil, tell me what that is. He can't send an email and tell me what you're talking about.
You know that he can't answer you on podcast.
He can send us an email. I know, but he's listening. He can send an email. I know it's not live.
So I have two reactions really quick. For one, for some reason, I always picture Neil wearing like a crooked top hat. Like a top hat that's got like a kink right in the side of it that veers off to the side. I don't know what you call those. Like an old, like he's a very, very well worked chimney sweep.
You mean so, like Johnny Depp dresses every day?
No, like more like Dick Van Dyke from Mary Poppins, I think he's saying.
Yeah, yeah, like I guess like Johnny Depp, but not like not with this like weird sheen of gothiness. Just like he's not trying to be a chimney sweep; he just is.
Is that gothiness? I thought it was pedophilia. I mean, I'm sorry.
Anyways, also, this is a really weird seg because you just went on pedophilia. I was going to say. Everyone's so fucking young. Jesus Christ. Wait, hold on. What year did Staffer Sean, who wrote into the podcast,
Staffer Sean,
like a weirdo. What year did he say he went to Riot Fest and then learned about good bands because he watched Rise Against?
14. I think he said 14.
2014, 2015.
Like that, yeah.
And I do remember that too, because the great thing was if you left, like, while the headliners started, you could still get on the bus before everybody else. So you like could hear the faint whisperings of Fall Out Boy as I was going downtown.
Oh, that's a total dad move. Gotta be traffic. That's a total dad move.
No, it's not all beating traffic. Because, like, when the Stooges closed it out, I was stood there till the bitter end. And when the Replacements closed it out, they both played, both those bands played earlier nights, if I remember right, Friday or Saturday.
I'm just thinking about this because, like, someone at my office yesterday sent out this message on our works Slack thing that we have, and they were like, "Congratulations, Adam, on being with the company for 12 years." And I'm like, 12 years? That means I would have like graduated from university 12 years ago, which means like, holy fuck! Like Staffer Sean, I'm pretty sure, I don't want to give away too much about his age and location. I'm pretty sure in baby school. And I've been working at my job.
Staffer Sean Adam, and I'm not going to give away too much about him either, but he's a year younger than my older son.
I'm trying to be purposefully vague on I don't want to give away.
Hey, and I'm being vague too, but I'm just saying he could easily be my
like, son. I don't want people to triangulate details about Staffer Sean's life by things that we say on here. But yeah, holy God, everyone's young. I don't understand why. I don't know, like there should just be like a garbage truck that pulls up front of our houses that we can climb in that'll just crush us and just leave us bring us out to some heap. You know, just that, like give the youth.
You know what that means, folks? We're playing rudimentary penile for the rest of the podcast.
Oh,
Sean seems like a really nice kid, and everybody does have a different entry point, so I'm willing to let him slide. But yeah, and he's probably right. I probably do have a selective memory about the lineup because I didn't watch those shitty bands. I mean, I did watch the Sam Haines and the Replacements. So he's probably right. And I haven't gone for a couple of years, but I have to say, if I had to take a side on this, Liverpool Neil is definitely, I share his perspective.
We sure went last year, Tom. Last year was the year to go, man.
I know it. I know it. I didn't have any money and it just didn't work out. It's very expensive. I mean, the cheap tickets right now that are left are around 180, and that will get you in the door, and that's it.
You see, I feel that my opinion on these music festivals has always got to be like somewhat tempered by the fact that I don't think I've really gone to any of them. I mean, the music festivals that I've gone to in recent memory have all been like
Lilith Fair.
Yeah, like Lilith Fair. No, they've all been like little smaller scale kind of like Canadian bar
hoppy
festival things, like where you go to like a bunch of bars in a town and it's all just, you know, a bunch of shows all booked within the same weekend, like those kind of festivals where it's not like standing in a field with 40,000 people. And I can't think right now when I would have last done that. And I almost want to say it might have been Warped Tour years and years and years ago.
But so even Warped, I think you're talking about more like, I think Warped Tour, you're talking about more like 10,000 people.
Yeah,
I don't think you're talking about. Riot Fest, I think their max of when they were selling it out on the days, I think it was 60,000 or I mean, something like that. Huge, insane number of people.
It's quite possible that I have never been to a music festival of this scale. So I'm entirely operating on imagining what it would be like to stand in a field full of people. And maybe I'm thinking about watching like Woodstock 99. on VHS at some point.
I think size scope wise, I think that is not that far off.
Oh God. Woodstock 99. We had a VHS cassette tape of that. And it was revelatory to me because I realized then, and we are going to talk about them later in the podcast, but watching Woodstock 99, outside of the fact that, there was a lot of like Limp Bizkit kind of things happening, but outside of that, it was the moment, I think, where I realized that, and I'm probably entirely wrong that I even played this. I feel like The Offspring played it. And I will confirm this with the internet in a second.
I feel like Green Day did.
Green Day did. Hold on, let's look this up before I make this point.
Rollins Band did, and they covered the Beastie Boys.
Let's figure this out here. Woodstock 99.
I've told the story, John, but I saw the Beastie Boys and Rollins Band together.
That's cool.
And in Kalamazoo, 1992 or 93.
There's a neat a Rollins Band CD EP called Hammer of the Gods, I think, and it's got a 30-minute jam, and it's got the Beastie Boys cover where the Rollins Band covers Gratitude. Go ahead, Adam.
What a fucking weird festival this was. This is the lineup of the East stage during Woodstock 99. So James Brown.
Wow, he could have played
G-Love
at the first
and
one.
Special Sauce. Jamiroquai.
Ugh.
Live.
Ugh.
Sheryl Crow.
Ugh. Do I have to keep doing this?
The Offspring. Korn. Bush. And that was one stage. So The Offspring did play it. So I remember having a VHS cassette because we wanted to watch, you know, I think Green Day played it, but we want to watch like Rage Against the Machine and everyone else that was there. And that was the moment where I realized that none of the Offspring songs from Americana onwards, Americana, what would you say that?
Americana.
None of the songs that they wrote from that point onwards, and maybe Americana just came out before Woodstock 99, I'll have to go check that. None of them, Dexter could, at least at that point in his life, sing. So anything that they played from Smash or Ixnay sounded fine. And then anything that was a later song where they clearly had, you know, audio studio tune. Help to help him hit all those peaks and high notes and all that shit, he could not do it at all live. And it has scarred me to this day. It completely fucked me up on The Offspring. So,
man, Offspring was to bring people together, but
you know,
I
saw Offspring. I've seen them a couple times in recent years, both times at Riot Fest. And the one time they played the entire Smash album all the way through, and I gotta say, it was almost embarrassing how much I enjoyed it, because I certainly don't consider myself much of an Offspring fan, but man, that Smash album was great, and it was fun. It was fun to see that. The rest of their stuff, you know, when they played Pretty Fly for a White Guy, you can bet that I was headed towards the beer line.
I think that song is amusing.
Yeah, amusing songs are amusing once or twice, though.
Yes,
it's a novelty. And that's what they did later was novelty. Their biggest hits after maybe the first couple albums were all novelty songs.
And all of their records had one. So I forget which, because they've released like 35 records at this point. But there was one of those records in the period after the three or four records that came out after Americana, where like they were still a moderately big band, but no one actually gave a shit. All of those records, if you listen to them, were punk rock records, except for the novelty song. Yeah, the one song that was written to try to capitalize on whatever punk songs,
but yeah, they were punk-ish songs.
Yeah, but at least they were.
And then they'd have the why don't you get a job song or whatever, and be like, oh, come on, dudes, or Pretty Fly for a White Guy.
Well, they have it, kids. Riot Fest, thumbs up or thumbs down. Adam and Tom hate Offspring.
You know what? Let's just be all over the place here, because it makes no sense to jump back to this later according to our schedule. So before we get back to the mail, we wanted to also mention the Offspring, because Dexter Holland, Offspring frontman here, he recently earned his PhD. Yeah.
All right. That's exactly. There we go.
So Dexter has earned a PhD in molecular biology from the University of Southern California this past spring. His dissertation was a 175-page document, which documented his research on HIV treatment. In a press release, and I guess you can put out a press release when you get a PhD. I don't really know this, but in a press release, anyway.
When you're Dexter Holland, you can put out a press release anytime you want.
Oh, okay. Actually, I have a press release thing to come back to. Holland stated, quote, "My research is not meant to be a cure or even an immediate step towards a cure, but I believe that by adding to the vast amount of knowledge that we've already learned about HIV in the last 30 years or so, we'll get there. Toward that end, I'm going to continue to do research, and you'll probably see more of my research papers get published here and there over the next few years." The dissertation is titled, quote, "Discovery of mature microRNA sequences within the protein coding regions of global HIV-1 genomes, predictions of novel mechanisms for viral infection and pathogenicity," end quote.
Well, they have it. Adam and Tom are busy making fun of Dexter Holland. Meanwhile, the guy's curing AIDS.
He can cure AIDS, but he can't hit the high notes. I don't know what to tell you.
I don't want to piss on his doctorate. I think that's awesome. And also, I would explain to you guys what that meant, what the title of his dissertation means, but we've already gone too long with our letters, so we'll go ahead and skip that section.
All right. Let's keep rolling here. Keep rolling. I want to talk more about Woodstock 99. Letters.
Okay, so this is another heavy letter. This is from Alex. Alex says, "On a recent episode, I think it was Ricky or John mentioned that the AJJ RSD release featured a reference to Slayer's lettering, which in of itself is a reference to the Nazi Special Forces. I am definitely a fan of AJJ, but I wonder how the band would respond to using Nazi symbols while distancing themselves from Andrew Jackson and the word Jihad. I wonder if they have an explanation as to why it is okay, or maybe they just don't know. If they found out, would they change the cover of the record? I love the podcast and never miss an episode. From Alex in Oregon."
I don't know anything about AJJ. I'm sort of sick of talking about them.
I'm not immediately familiar with what the cover art to that looked like. So if it was like in the Slayer,
The Slayer has an album called Decade of Aggression, which is widely considered the greatest or one of the greatest thrash metal albums.
Oh, that's Decade of Aggression was a live album, dude. A double live album.
That's what I said.
Oh, yeah, but it's considered one of the greatest. I never heard that it was considered one of the greatest thrash metal albums ever, but hey, whatever. Okay.
No, thrash metal live albums. Okay. It's like the thrash metal live album.
Okay.
The cover is just Jeff Hanneman in like orange, but it has Slayer, it just says Slayer on it. But of course, the Slayer S is the Nazi Stufenwaffle S. It's the same.
It's the same thing that like Kiss was accused of, right?
Where like they used that stylized S.
Right.
Whatever. We can't cede fonts to the Nazis. We're taking fonts back.
But it clearly is a reference to the Nazis, especially with Slayer. Although actually, you know, even till this day, Slayer gets accused of being Nazis. But no one ever brings up the fact that there's two Latino guys in the band. One guy's whose dad got medals for killing Nazis in the Battle of Normandy, and another guy that's Jewish. I really don't see how Slayer's Nazis.
Hanneman was always obsessed with like Nazi history and stuff. He was a big history buff. I don't think I mean, there's lots of people who are interested in Nazis from an intellectual point of view. That doesn't mean you're
a Nazi. But I'm saying people accuse Slayer of being Nazis when they're clearly not. And it's almost like that weird thing where people get a thrill out of like saying Slayer's racist. And it's really quite ghoulish because they're actually getting some sort of self-gratification out of accusing someone of being racist when they're really not. It's a weird dynamic. But I mean, Adam, I think you're unfairly dismissing Alex's criticism. I mean, it clearly is the Nazi S they use, and it's clearly a reference to it. Slayer has used Nazi imagery multiple times on their albums and art and stuff.
I guess I would approach it by saying, who is it? What is it actually signifying? Right. So if Slayer does it, the signification there is that, you know, it's meant to look like aggressive and pseudo militaristic and invoke those sorts of things. But no one's looking at Slayer and thinking that Slayer's usage of it, you know, in any way, you know, is paying homage to the Nazis, right? Like it's a reference. You look at AJJ's usage of it, the same thing, but one removed, where people are going to look and say, oh, okay, well, it's signifying that they're doing a riff on Slayer. No one's going to look at it and take two hops over the actual cultural context of it and go, oh, AJJ is clearly in league with the Luftwaffe, right? Like
No one thought they were in league with jihadists or whatever either, you know?
Well, that's why, I mean,
or Andrew Jackson.
That's partly why their explanation for changing their name was always sort of weird to me, because I'm not in that band, so I don't know what they actually had to deal with. But the things that they said that they had to deal with always struck me as sort of odd. Like, if you wanted to get away from the name because the name is problematic, maybe just because of the jihad thing, you know, sure, go away from that. Were people coming up to them at some folk punk show that they played and seriously challenging them on like the philosophical tenets of Andrew Jackson? Like, was that happening to them, or did people just look at it like a goofy name? I looked at it always like the name of there was that other that band, this bike is a pipe bomb, right? Where it was just a weirdly provocative name that doesn't mean shit. It just sounds cool from a, you know, from you being one of these like post against me folk punk bands, right? They all had crazy names like that. And it always just sort of fell into that for me. I didn't actually see any part of that name as something that they felt that they need to challenge or defend or whatever. So, I mean, you know, they can change it as if they want. It's their band. But I don't know. I never read too much out of it, I guess.
I'm saying if you're going to grandstand, you got to walk the walk. And I'm saying they're not quite walking the walk. I'm saying they're selectively walking the walk. You know what I mean? If you want to distance yourself from offensive imagery, then you can't pick and choose which ethnicities or cultural people it is offensive to and which it isn't. That's what I'm saying.
Man. I don't know. I think we're making much ado about nothing.
But seriously, Woodstock 99, right?
I don't know. There's something about this band. It just they don't do it for me musically, and I don't know.
So we have more mail, or should we say that till next week?
No, I'm enjoying the mail here. It's preventing me from actually having to. Yeah, it's
pretty much every show is an all male show. Punk news. This is from Jeff. Jeff says, "Ahoy, my name is Jeff." Ahoy, my name is Jeff. I'm just curious to see if any of you have a guilty pleasure artist. I use the term guilty pleasure as an identifier rather than something to be embarrassed about, because you shouldn't ever be embarrassed about what music you listen to. I'll go first. Kesha, from Jeff.
Hmm. Yeah, that you should know that you should be embarrassed about that, Jeff.
This is a cool question.
I got easy answer for me. Because of my age and what I grew up listening to, my guilty pleasure, I would say, is a lot of 80s stuff, like a band like The Outfield or somebody like George Michael or something, or especially the hair metal stuff. I grew up listening to hair metal stuff. I still, man, if I hear freaking Whitesnake or Def Leppard or something, I'm all over it. So that would be my guilty pleasure, Jeff.
White Snake.
If you get the White Snake reference to punk news, that is a deep cut reference, White Snake.
Oh, see, I don't even. I know we did a White Snake thing, but I can't even fucking remember what we did. That we're just layers of references here. I don't know if these things that I'm going to mention are, I'm particularly consider them guilty pleasures, because I will freely admit to listening to these.
Come
things.
On, John. Come on, but say it, Adam. I'm going to mock you. Say it. Get ready. Get ready.
They're not. But the two things that I've been listening to a lot lately, the one, to be like a completely cliched person, I've listened to a lot of Tragically Hip over the last year and a half, like to be like really clichedly Canadian.
Is Gorge still alive? Is he still kicking?
He's still alive. He was doing solo stuff.
Okay. I didn't know. I was trying to be disrespectful.
Yeah, he was doing like the occasional like charity kind of event thing, but I think the band is done. But anyway, that whole thing, just I got swept up in it, and I've been like going back and listening to all this Tragically Hip stuff that when I was in high school, I fucking hated, and I hated everyone that listened to it. And I realized a little bit that was more me just hating what the popular kids were into than me actually having a valid opinion on it. But my other thing, and this isn't, I don't know, this isn't guilty either. I'm all about this. I've been listening to so much Gordon Lightfoot. Like so much. I have a vinyl copy of Gord's Gold, nice. Which was a Gordon Lightfoot the big greatest hits collection that I am super super stoked was my mom's, and has like my it has like an old like return to address sticker on it from my parents' house way back in the day. But I will listen to Gord's Gold just all the time. And the other day I was folding laundry, and the kids were buzzing around the room, and they're like, turn on the TV. And I'm like, well, I'm not turning on one of your fucking things. So I turned on YouTube, and I just started playing like Gordon Lightfoot stuff. And there's like old Gordon, like Gordon Lightfoot and Johnny Cash playing songs together. And I'm just like, this is great. I'm all about this Gordon Lightfoot thing. So that's, I've been listening to a lot of that.
That's very Canadian. I think you get a pass on that just because of how Canadian it is, honestly. Same thing with Tragically Hip.
Maybe, but I can juxtapose it against something, which is fun. So this we've talked about this on the show a little bit, but over the, like the month of April, I basically was like working days and nights and weekends and stuck in my office on a big project. And when I was there at like 11 in the evening, writing code, no one else is there, I would inevitably listen to two things back to back. One would be Gord's Gold, and the other would be one of these John Gentile School of Hip Hop records.
Oh,
so I would listen to like, I would listen to like Return to the Boom Bap, and then I would listen to Gord's Gold, or I would listen to fucking like America's Most Wanted or something. What is the Ice Cube one?
America's Most Wanted.
Yeah. And then I would listen to Gord's Gold. Right. I don't know. Those two things. Like I want like gangster rap and then Gordon Lightfoot. And that's been my back and forth. I don't know why.
Well, I'm glad you become a convert. Adam, a little while ago, didn't you say you are now also a Run the Jewels fan?
I always sort of appreciated the Run the Jewels thing. I have no beef with them. I haven't been super into it in that I find it hard to get into a lot of hip hop, but I'm not against it. I'm not going to listen to their fucking Cat record or anything, but
I have.
But John, what's your guilty pleasure?
Honestly, I've never felt as though I've had a guilty pleasure, but from a certain perspective, it's pretentious. And there's two examples I can always go to: Men at Work and Flock of Seagulls. I think both those bands are great. And I'm like, well, that's not a guilty pleasure because they're a great band. And some of them might say, well, there's just a cheesy 80s band. And I'm like, oh, well, you just don't get it. You don't get the deep
that's
subtlety
not
of
that's
Men
not
at Work
that
doing Land Down Under.
John, that's in the same ballpark as me, except for I remember when they were actually, you know, on the radio. But I don't think that's pretentious. You know, if you're really being pretentious, you'd be like, oh, I only listen to Coltrane and Miles Davis. You know, that's pretentious.
We could bring all this together and start talking about like Men Without Hats.
See, I don't like
Men
Without Hats.
I like them.
Though.
I dig them. Pop Goes the World, man. That's good.
See, there you go. Like, so this is the commonality here, right? Canadian band.
Were they?
From See, the
I wouldn't
80s.
Even have known that.
Yeah, they're from Montreal. So Canadian band from the 80s, full of dumb new wave stuff like that. That's we should just start a Men Without Hats thing.
Were they the Safety Dance band?
They're a Safety Dance band. Yeah.
Oh, that was a huge hit. I love that song.
I, over the past 2 years, I've been doing this thing where I've been investigating 80s bands to see if there actually is substance, because I got that Flock of Seagulls record, and that first Flock of Seagulls record is great. I've stumbled upon a new gem, The Buggles, Video Killed the Radio Star. I got their first album. It's not what you would think. It's like Flock of Seagulls. The album is actually kind of dark and spooky, and that one track is like the outlier, if you will. Buggles' first album, excellent album.
I will check that out.
Kind of like Devo, kind of like evil Devo.
Yeah, that's what I was comparing them to, like a Devo. And that's a good, that's a high compliment for me.
Well, let's do at least one more mail. This is from Earl777. Earl says, a few episodes, someone asked if you guys would do more show reviews live on the podcast. I second that request from Earl.
I don't have one because I've been working. so that's all you got. I got shit. You know, anyone have an on the prompt to fly, you know, on the fly show review here?
Tom just did his 200th review for Punk News.
Yeah, that was Murphy's Law. That was really fun. More recently, thank you, John. More recently, I went to see some local boys here kick off their tour. I went and saw Bong Mountain and the Eradicator, who's from Chicago, kick off a tour around Pooza Fest.
What's that crazy noise?
That's my computer.
I think Tom's making a smoothie.
Is it coming to life?
I know, it sounds like a blender, right? Dude, I have a diesel exhaust fan on my computer. Thank you, Hewlett Packard.
Is the Eradicator, like the Eradicator is in the Kids in the Hall Eradicator?
Yeah,
like
the guy in the mask who carries a squash racket and screams about playing squash. It's very novelty, but also highly amusing. I don't want to give too in-depth of a review because I am working on writing it, even though I haven't been very motivated to get to it because it's been like 5 days now. But so I've been to about 3 shows in the last 2 weeks or so. And then I don't think I have anything until I think about the beginning of June. And then in June, I got a pretty busy schedule. I try to pace myself a little bit. But
all right,
not bad for an old guy. But I wouldn't be opposed to doing that. It's kind of on the fly. You know what I mean? So.
Well, you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org, and we love getting your mail.
All right. So before we get into the news this week, let's play a song. Someone at some point in their rants about Riot Fest, I believe it was Liverpool Neil, as you were reading his letter, you mentioned The Business. And my brain immediately flashed back to the amazing Give 'Em the Boot compilation. So this is the song that The Business had on there. I believe it is Spirit of the Streets from
Business were on that. I completely forgot
Business
that.
Were on that. I mean, I better be right, hon. The Business, Give 'Em the Boot. Yep. See, Internet says it's right. The Business, cool. Spirit of the Sweet, as of the song. Streets from 1997's Give 'Em the Woo. Boot compilation. Wow, that's a long time ago. Anyways, the song rules. Here you go.
Get us at a huckleberry. It don't matter if you're back or wide. It's not your cover.
back. There's lots of stuff that happened this past week, and we went long before we even got to the real news. So let's get into this. First of all, there is a band that and Tom, you were starting to mention this before the show. I have never heard. I believe you have never heard.
I don't know how you guys never heard of this, but I've heard of them.
I just never listened to them.
I never hear about these bands until someone gets accused of sexual assault. That's
like the best thing they can do for their career. Yeah,
if you're looking for a PR move to get your band heard by cynical old people that don't give a shit anymore, get accused of sexual assault, because then I will know who you are. Not to make light of this, but Power Bottom, PWRBTTM, is a band that was on Polyvinyl Records. They're into some trouble here. So I'm just going to blow through this article here, because there's a lot of anonymous accusations and things like that in it. So I'll just give you what we got, and you can make a decision about it. So on May 11th, which was the day before the release of the band's new album, Power Bottom's Ben Hopkins was accused of sexual assault. A person named Kitty Corden Collin posted in a private Facebook group that Hopkins was a, quote, known sexual predator, quote, and that she had witnessed Hopkins make unwanted sexual contact with other people. The post also accused Hopkins of anti-Semitism and included a picture of him standing next to a swastika that was drawn in sand on a beach. The post was copy and pasted and made its way around online, and everyone sort of got to see it. The next day, the band released a statement. They said they were, quote, shocked by the allegation and requested that people who believed that they had been sexually assaulted by members of the band contact an email address associated with the band to work towards a resolution. Adam's going to jump in here and say, that's really fucking weird.
That's okay. A great idea. I think that's a super great idea.
It's like, is it like a link on your website? Like, if you've been sexually assaulted by our
Exactly. Somebody was mocking one of our brilliant comm members. Like, what is it? Like $3.99 for the first minute and $1.99 for each.
Anyway, sir. So the fact that they did that was criticized widely on social media by many people. Many of whom brought issue with the fact that the band had requested that the alleged victims contact the abusers directly. So the website Jezebel from the Gawker family there, they spoke with an anonymous person that stated that she was assaulted by Hopkins. In that interview, that this anonymous person stated that Power Bottom's statement that they were shocked was false. They also stated that the band's Liv Bruce spoke with the anonymous person about the alleged assault many months ago, and that Bruce was fully aware of the situation. So following this, Power Bottom's two touring members left the band. They were also dropped by Polyvinyl Records, and Polyvinyl has stated that they are no longer selling the band's releases, and they're actually offering a refund of anyone that's purchased releases that want a refund. The band has announced that they are canceling their upcoming tour, and everything is basically in the shit for them. So that is the Power Bottom situation, not too dissimilar from several of the, you know, someone shows up on Facebook or Tumblr and accuses a band member of impropriety, and then everything goes crazy online stories that we've had. And don't know anything about this, so I don't want to make any accusatory statements one way or the other on behalf of punknews.org or the Punk News podcast. This is just what's going around. Any thoughts on this, Mr. John, maybe?
Two things. Three things. One of the things is the reason why this is striking such a chord with people as opposed to other bands that have been accused of things is that this band kind of made it their cornerstone of LGBT acceptance and a stance against sexual assault and that kind of a thing. They were actually quite vocal about that. And there's a certain, I guess, lexicon that goes along with, I guess, modern sexual consent and sexual assault that certain segments use, and this band was very much involved in that. I agree with some of those philosophies. I disagree with some of those philosophies. The point being is it was kind of one of their main things. That, like, we're against sexual assault, and anytime somebody's sexually assaulted, we're here to support them. And then lo and behold, 50% of the band has been accused of sexually assaulting someone multiple times. The thing that So that's the reason why this whole thing collapsed immediately. The other thing is, and I've talked about this before, is in the United States, you're not guilty until you're proven guilty. You're innocent until you're proven guilty. But for some reason on this kind of thing, we always say, oh, the person's guilty if they're accused, which is a dangerous precedent. However, on the other hand, and I'm really on the fence on this argument, is on the other hand, you do want to protect people that have been sexually assaulted, and you do want to make it easy for people that have been sexually assaulted to report the assault. So you have that issue there. And the other thing is that, though, if someone accuses you of something like really serious, you wouldn't say, if you believe you've been assaulted by us, let us know. You would say, no, that's not true. When Colin, what's his name? Of Bright Eyes, what's his name?
Connor Oberst,
when he got accused of something he didn't do, he said, listen, I didn't do it. I feel sorry for this lady because she's got issues, but I didn't do anything. And lo and behold, he proved that he didn't do anything. And so it went away. If you didn't do anything, then I think you got to say, I didn't do anything. And I almost wonder, I don't think this is the case, but I don't know, is because this band is so heavily involved in, like, you know, the thought process and lexicography of contemporary sexual assault terminology, if you will, maybe they felt they couldn't say we didn't do anything, even if they didn't. I don't think that is the case, though, but I don't know, you know. So the point being is you are innocent until proven guilty, but on the other hand, we want to protect the people that have been sexually assaulted, and if someone accuses you of something heavy duty, you kind of do want to say, I didn't do it. So I'm on the fence on this issue. And the reason I don't have a strong opinion or a stronger opinion is because I don't really care about this band. So if it does turn out they did bad stuff, then I feel sorry for the person that was been assaulted, but I don't care about the band. You know what I mean?
I think an interesting question would be like what is the right course of action if you're a band and you're accused of that kind of thing?
Like, if you didn't do it, you got to say, I didn't do it. You got to say, I'm sorry. The person might have.
No. But the thing that they were widely derided on was this, like, you know, oh, you know, if you think you were sexual assaulted by Powerbottom, email assault@powerbottom.com and tell us, like, right. Like that part, people were, I don't know if that was actually what they did, but,
Put your mouse and click on where you were.
Honestly,
where
that sounds touched. That sounds like to me that maybe this is just, I don't know. This is me guessing. It sounds like to me it's like, oh, well, maybe we did something. So let's see if we can put out this fire privately. And that's the other issue with sexual consent and that kind of a thing. It's very murky about what does constitute consent I don't know if it's murky with constitute consent. It's very hard to prove things ex post facto. You know what I mean?
Would it have been more acceptable for them to say something like, you know, if this accusation is real, you know, please contact the authorities and we'll cooperate with them. Like,
yes.
Is doing that a better way to go about it? Because I could absolutely see someone commenting on, like, oh, well, that's easy to say until, you know that by contacting the authorities, you're going to be re-victimized by having to, like, you know, go be put into all of these interrogatory situations and this, that, and the other. And this all boils down to, like, you know, some sort of power differential at some point. So, like, but is that a better way to go about it? To say, like,
but hey, I disagree, Adam, because if they didn't do anything, then it's not their problem that the other person is going to have a tough time because they're innocent. So you can't give, you know, deference to someone that's not being truthful. But if that person is being truthful, well, then screw you. You shouldn't be sexually assaulting people. I don't care about you. You know what I mean? That is the sexual assaulter, you see.
Just for the record, we don't think anyone should be sexually assaulting anyone.
No, you're missing what I'm saying.
I'm not. I was being flippant, but okay. I hear you.
It is a strange crime in that we have kind of taken this guilty until proven innocent thing about this one crime. And the other thing that makes it strange is, you know, if you were accused of murder, but it came out later that you were found innocent in a court of law, you're not going to be labeled a murderer the rest of your life. But with this sexual assault stuff, man, it's hard to shake.
That's why you got, if it's not true, you got to say it's not true.
Yeah.
You know?
And that being said, I meant to try to listen to this band. I am going to assume that they're probably not my cup of tea. And if you want me to not listen to your band, you should not have vowels and call your band Powerbottom. But that's just me, you know. I'm a crusty old bastard, so. Anyway, I didn't have time to check it out. Maybe I will. Maybe they'll rock my world.
If I can find it anywhere. I am fascinated by the noises that Tom's computer is making.
I turn my mic down when I'm not speaking. Yes, it's really hot. So it's like unseasonably warm here in Michigan in May. It was like 87 degrees today.
So your computer right now.
It's just like, dude, I took my shirt off. I'm sweating. I'm literally sitting here in my basketball shorts.
This is all right. I didn't want to know that, but if it gets any hotter,
I'm going straight up Red Hot Chili Peppers, and I'll be wearing a sock over my genitalia, and that'll be it.
I'm just imagining that noise is his pina colada maker, and it's so hot he's just making himself pina coladas. Making
some drinks. Yeah, I wish.
I just picture it screaming like it's in pain. your poor system.
Kill me.
Yeah, basically. All right, moving off this. To a story that is a one that behind the scenes John has not shut up about for a week and a half. I'm gonna let John read it.
We debuted a new song, or a new live song by Off, one of the very greatest new punk rock bands of all time. We debuted Blast, which is off the live album Live at the 930 Club. The 930 Club album was originally released about 2 or 3 years ago in a very limited release. It is now getting a wide release, and it was a great honor and a great pleasure and a great thrill to debut this track. And more to the point, you know, once in a while, I'll boohoo. It's like, the flavor of the month band doesn't want to talk to punk news. I'm so sad, man. But you know what, baby? Keith Morris is there. Jello is there. Blag is there. You know, Screaming Females are there. The people that count are there. And more so than ever before, the power of punk is reaffirmed in my eyes. Thank you, Keith Morris. Thank you, Off, for being amazing bands. This track is killer, and it just goes to show why the band is so good live. And more live albums, the better. That's what I say.
Yeah, and this is cool. This is from like the first four EPs, right? This song?
It Blast is from the, yeah, Blast from the 930 Club was recorded between the first and second album.
Yeah, so this is fun. Off is one of those bands that there is not a hell of a lot that feels different between a live Off recording and a studio Off recording. So you should definitely check this out if you enjoy their studio stuff, because it's like the studio stuff with banter.
I don't understand why people don't like, why punks don't like live albums. I love live albums. I think people listen to whack bands because Off's live albums are awesome, you know?
I like that.
I mean, you know, there's the occasional good live punk album, but for the most part, they're pretty mixed bag, bad recordings, you know,
what are you talking
classic
about?
Bands.
There's Off live at the 930 Club. There's Off live in the BBC. There's Circle Jerks live at House of Blues. There's Circle Jerks gig live.
Exactly.
I love live albums. Just some of my favorite albums. And this just goes to show why Off is so great. And Keith Morris is the man and the rest of the band. I very much appreciate this band and what they've done for us in punk news, and how they truly are punks. And that even when they go off to Vice, they'll still talk to punk news. And I appreciate that and respect that. More than almost any other band there is. I really do.
Cool. Well, let's move on from there and talk about urine.
What an episode, I'll tell you.
So, yeah, there's lots of stuff. So, there is a brewery in Denmark called Norebro Brygges, I guess, which sounds like a Guar character. Should I try to pronounce this better? What is it? Brygges?
I would say Norebro Brygges.
Norebro Brygges. I just pitch, it's a giant monster that has like six penises and they all shoot silly string at people. That's what I imagine. That's what happens at Guar shows, right?
It is.
Okay.
It's so, usually fake blood and semen, yes. There's some pee though.
Okay, so this Denmark brewery, they are making a new type of beer. The brewery collected 50,000, saying the number makes me laugh, 50,000 liters of human urine from the latest Roskilde Festival, which is a music festival.
I bet Neil and I would have hated the lineup for this also. I'm going to go ahead and guess.
I'll look it up and we'll find out. So this urine was then used to fertilize the barley fields that will serve as the base grain for this new type of Pilsner that they're brewing. The Pilsner is being called Pissner because of the P. And it apparently has a, quote, unique taste, which is cool. So and the bottle has a little recycling symbol where it's like man drinking beer goes to penis, goes to the wheat, grows to the brewery, goes back into the man.
Do you think his little wee wee? Do you think they need to put that in there? I don't think they need to put that in there.
I think it discounts the female audience whose urine they, also.
There you go.
Exactly. Very sexist.
Right. So. So, anyways, there is a beer that was grown from wheat that was in a field that was filled with urine. Apparently, the folks in Denmark who maintain health standards, the Agriculture and Food Council, they have approved the process that they're doing. So this is now a thing. My guess is that there's probably a some verifiable food science reason that using urine to grow crops is probably safe enough for the purposes of this. So I'm not necessarily going to question that. I'm more going to question how did they collect 50,000 things of urine?
They just sucked out the porta potties.
No, you've been to music festivals and you've been in a porta potty at a music festival. It is not exclusively collecting urine. It is there is all sorts of sanitary products in there. There's, you know, hats.
To be fair, Europe is famous for its piss troughs. If you ever been to Europe, you are well versed with their piss troughs.
Maybe it's from trough. So who plays the, at least, okay, so this is a 2017 edition of the Roskilde Festival. So these are not the bands whose fans urine you'll probably get to experience. It would be whatever last year's one was. But if we're talking about it, the headliners of Roskilde this year, Food Fighters, Arcade Fire.
Food Fighters!
Foo Fighters. I didn't mean to put a D on there. Foo Fighters, Arcade Fire, The Weeknd, The XX, A Tribe Called Quest. Anthrax is playing it. Blink 182. Who else?
Wow, what a mishmash.
It's one of these omni festivals that they do where everyone plays it from all genres and then you pee in a trough.
What Adam said,
I would drink Anthrax fans pee, but not the Weeknd fans. They have to be the worst.
Two things is when Adam was saying, how do you think they collect this? I imagine them like hiring a bunch of perverts to like hang out by like a porta potty with like a can.
Grab and direct.
second thing is this is gross, but on the other hand, they fertilize fields with cow doo-doo. So is this gross?
It's totally a gimmick. There is absolutely nothing unsafe about this at all. You could eat the grain they're growing with the urine and it wouldn't have any urine in it. It's just totally a gimmick.
I'm saying, is this grosser than cow doo-doo? You know, I don't know. I actually think it is for some reason. I think because of the human element, you know.
The human element means a lot. I mean, no more than an hour ago, I was out dumping bags of cow and sheep manure into the garden, and never once did it occur to me that it was poop. But
yeah, and you're going to eat the tomatoes directly that come out of that. Grain is processed again.
If I picked up this bag of manure and there is a picture of Tom Trauma on it, I don't know if I may stop and question.
You give me your address. I'll send you a couple bags fresh. It'll be fine.
Do you think now that they're fertilizing fields with human urine, like certain people will have more desirable urine, so you can buy like Tom Trauma brand urine to like fertilize your field? It's got like a picture of Tom.
I only drink beer made from fans of Five Finger Death Punch. yes.
Adam, Adam and Tom, would you, if someone said, have a free bottle of Pilsner, would you drink it?
John, you just said the magic words. Whether or not I drank that beer would all come down to who was buying.
If it's my turn,
I'll get you a nice Miller Lite.
I would totally drink it because if for no other reason than I've got to assume that the authorities in Denmark that are looking at this from a health and science standpoint aren't out to kill me, and therefore their scientific, you know, read on it is valid. Like, you can't be someone that believes in science and then at the same point go, but ick, I don't like that. Like, no, man. Science says it's cool. Drink the fucking piss. That's what I say.
There you go.
No one's vouching for this, but that's
I am a bit of a wastewater expert, and I would love to speak to this topic, but I just don't think our multitude of fans are really that interested in the ins and outs of, you know, water cleanliness and whatnot. But it'd be fine. I'd drink it if somebody else bought me one.
Well, there you go. Listen,
Send all beer submissions to Tom Trauma, care of Punk News. No, sorry.
Good. Well, listen, I'm going to play a song that perhaps inspired this beer. This is Frank Zappa doing Bobby Brown Goes Down.
Hey there, people, I'm Bobby Brown. They say I'm the cutest boy in town. My car is fast, my teeth are shiny. I tell all the girls they can kiss my hiney. Here I am at a famous school. I'm dressing sharp and I'm acting cool. I got a cheerleader here, wants to help with my paper. Let her do all the work and maybe later I'll rape her. Oh God, I am the American dream. I do not think I'm too extreme, and I'm a handsome son of a bitch. I'm gonna get a good job and be real rich. Get a good, get a good, get a good, get a good. Women's liberation came creeping all across the nation. I tell you people, I was not ready when I fucked this dyke by the name of Freddie. She made it speech then, all she tried to make me say when. She had my balls in a vice, but she left the dick. I guess it's still hooked on, but now it shoots too quick. Oh God, I am the American dream, but now I smell like Vaseline, and I'm a miserable son of a bitch. Am I a boy or a lady? I don't know which. I wonder, 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 wonder. So I went out and bought me a leisure suit. I jingled my change, but I'm still kinda cute. Got a job doing radio promo, and none of the jocks can even tell I'm a homo. Eventually me and a friend sorta drifted along into S&M. I can take about an hour on the Tower of Power, as long as I get a little golden shower. Oh God, I am the American dream, with a spindle up my butt till it makes me scream. And I'll do anything to get ahead. I'll lay awake nights saying thank you, Fred. Oh God, I'm so fantastic. Thanks to Freddie, I'm a sexual spastic. And my name is Bobby Brown. Watch me now, going down. And my name is Bobby Brown. Watch me now, I'm going down. And my name is Bobby Brown. Watch me now, I'm going down.
All right, we're back. It was Zappa. That hasn't happened.
Wow, we are really covering a lot of ground tonight, fellas. I mean, we haven't really gone anywhere. We're kind of going around in circles, but in a strange way, we've covered a lot of ground, I think.
That's right. All right. So now we are going to continue with, where the fuck is my list of what we're talking about? Oh, John. Okay. So I'm going to tell you the story about this before we even talk about this, because it was an amusing moment in my life that I chose not to go. You know, the Robert Frost poem, the, you know, Two Roads Diverged,
one of the roads
that I did not travel on, John, was I was recently in Phoenix, Arizona for a tech conference thing, and we got back to our hotel from the conference, and we said, where are we going to go get some beers and food? So we pulled up the old internet there and searched around to see what was near us. And one of the things that was literally down the street and around the corner was Alice Coopertown, which is a theme bar owned by Alice Cooper in Phoenix.
That, there used to be one in Cleveland. I have been to one.
That, as I understand it, all of the waitresses have Alice Cooper makeup. And,
oh, really?
According to pictures on Facebook that we looked at when we decided that this is not a place we want to go.
I thought
it was fine. I mean, it was like a nice bar restaurant, more Hard Rock Cafe than, you know, hardcore drinking bar. Pretty cool. The one in Cleveland went out of business, so.
So we're talking about this because the surviving members of the original Alice Cooper group reunited recently to play some songs. John, you are the source of every bit of Alice Cooper news and punk news has ever published. So tell us about this.
Well, this is a momentous occasion because when people say Alice Cooper, there's actually two Alice Cooper bands. There's pre-1976 and post-1976. Pre-1976, when we say Alice Cooper, we mean the Alice Cooper band, which is Alice Cooper, Dennis Dunaway, Glenn Dixon, Michael Bruce, and Neil Smith. And they made some of the greatest albums ever. Post-1976, starting with Welcome to My Nightmare. When we say Alice Cooper,
I think it was 70. I think it was 75, John. I think the original band was about 74. Only made it till, but
you might be right.
Because Welcome to My Nightmare, I think, was 75. But
Welcome to My Nightmare is Alice Cooper, the person, not the band. And yes. although Welcome to My Nightmare is a fantastic album, and there were good albums after that, none of them quite had the power and the cleverness and really the songcraft of the Alice Cooper group. They got together for a couple of songs last year and put out a really good record store day 7-inch, which just goes to show that they still have it. And as these YouTube videos show, I mean, they're looking pretty old. That's because they are pretty old. They're 70. But man, like you can tell that these are the kind of guys that you don't see this anymore. Is they learned to play by playing the blues, and they kind of perfected, or not perfected, but really worked on their technique before, I guess, starting a band. And so they never lose that technique, and they are sounding good. And you can also actually hear, like, in the Stooges, in the MC5, in the Alice Cooper group, you can hear that inherent blues soul that you don't hear in a lot of modern bands. And I think it just comes down to technique and learning from the blues as opposed to learning from rock. And these guys still got it. I really hope, I mean, they've been doing this more and more. Maybe they're going to get together for a tour or a live album or something. And I hope they do, because they are sounding great.
I have not. I didn't get a chance to hear this yet, but I agree with pretty much everything you said about Alice Cooper, John. The way the two guitars work together on those early albums, and the theatrical nature of the music, and theatrical music isn't necessarily my thing, but man, they were good at it. I listen to those old albums regularly still.
So if we're gonna just like do a really good seg off of theatrical music, we're gonna talk about Danzig just a bit. Danzig has released a new track off his upcoming album. The tune is called Last Ride. It is from the record Black Laden Crown, which we've talked about previously on the show. It's due out on the 26th of May. So you can go to Punk News, find a link to that if you want to go listen to it. You guys are Danzig people. Immediate thoughts?
Hit it, Tom. I got thoughts.
You know, I thought the first day there was like this single thing that leaked, and I thought it was a real turd. I was pretty worried. This one I thought was pretty good. I didn't think it was great, but I thought it was pretty good. I mean, if the whole album was like that, I would be livable.
I thought Devil on Highway 9 was not that good. Weak lyrics and really weird, bad production, honestly. But that
covers album had horrible production.
Well, that's the thing. Like, is he trying to do like Misfit style production, or are they just being cheap? Or
does he not, doing it himself? Is like doing it himself instead of paying somebody else to?
I thought this track Last Ride, I thought it was great. It's solidly in the Danzig 2 territory. And if the whole album sounded like this, I'd be thrilled.
It's not in the Danzig 2. That's sacrilege. It's not anywhere near that. But it's like better than Danzig 5.
No, I'm not saying it's better than Danzig 2. I'm saying it's like Danzig 2. And that,
I don't know.
I
only listened to it once, and I thought it was pretty decent, but I didn't think it was anything inspired.
It sounds like Long Way Back from Hell. That's Danzig 2.
No, I know what Long Way Back from Hell is, John. Don't tell me what Long Way Back from Hell is. But I don't know. I thought it was decent. I wasn't bowled over by it.
All I'm saying is I thought this was very good. If the album sounded like this, I'd be very excited. I thought the last full album, Death of Red Sabbath, was great. I just wish I could understand why they're making certain production choices. If it's a money thing, if it's just a don't question me, I know what I'm doing kind of thing, or I don't know.
It's gotta be that, John. It can't be a money thing. Kids are making Pro Tools albums in their living rooms that sound better than that last album.
The other weird thing about Devil on Highway 9 is Danzig is famous for doubling, tripling, or even quadrupling his vocals, but on Devil on Highway 9, he didn't. You know, that's it was weird. It was like a demo. I don't know, man.
Well, and maybe, honestly, maybe it was a demo, and maybe, you know, maybe it will be better when it put on the record. I just didn't think the song was that good to begin with.
Yeah, but, the refrain we'll is see. Devil on Highway 9. That's not that great of a refrain, you know? But Last Ride, I like Tom, I was worried, but Last Ride, I thought, was very good. So, I'm excited. I don't think it's going to be better than Death Red Sabbath, but I think it'll be pretty good.
Yeah, I think it'll at least hold its own with, like, 6, 7, 8. That kind of area.
Yeah, I thought 8 was very good too.
I mean, they all had their moments, other than 5. 5 had no moments, but we'll see. You know, I'm going to try to be optimistic.
All right, so we have a few more things that we want to touch on here. We'll jump to the last one, or to the more interesting one later. Maybe, I don't know. What do you think, John? What should we do with this?
Well, we can skip that one or hold it till next week. I don't really care. Just a fun factoid.
Okay, that's more of a Ricky Frankel story. We'll bring it up then.
Yeah.
Okay, two things that you may want to go listen to if you are a fan of either of these, let's charitably call them legacy acts at this point. So, one, the Lillingtons have released a song called Rubber Room. There's a music video for it. The track's going to be on their upcoming record, which is called Project 313, which is coming out on June 9th on Red Scare Records. So the Lillingtons, of course, are the precursor band to Teenage Bottle Rocket, share a lot of similarities with them. So there's that. And on the other end of it, Rancid has released a video for a new song called Telegraph Avenue. It's off their upcoming record Troublemaker, which is due out also on June 9th on Hellcat. So you can check out either or both of those if one of those things floats your boat. Do either of these songs speak to you, Mr. Tom Trauma?
I love the Lillingtons, and I liked this song. Sometimes a lack of artistic development is just what we need from a band. So I did. I liked that song a lot. I did not have the heart to listen to the Rancid song. I don't know what it was. When they announced the name of the album, it like sucked the air out of the room for me. I'm like, Troublemaker? That's the name of the album? I haven't had the heart to listen to it. I mean, maybe it'd be great. I mean, listen, Rancid's going to sell a shitload of records whether it sucks or not. And the Lillingtons are going to sell, you know, far less whether it's good or not. So,
John, do you have an opinion on these?
The Rancid track is, I think what's most frustrating for Rancid fans is this track is not terrible. It's not mind-blowing, but it's not terrible. To a degree, it sounds like Rancid is trying again. On the last two albums, it didn't seem like they were trying at all. It just sounded like they just came in and just spat something out and said, here's a Rancid track. Now I'm going back to the old form Casuals, and Tim Armstrong was like, I'm going back to covering Dusty Springfield or whatever. I think what's frustrating is it sounds like they're trying, and it sounds like they're trying to do classic Rancid, but they are facing the enigma, not the enigma. The problem is that you can't go home again to a degree. And if you move away from a certain thing, you can't just say, oh, we're doing it again, because clearly they're in different mental states. They're in different emotional states with each other. They're a different band than they were 20 years ago. So you can't just be like, we're doing it again, boys. And I guess the problem is they didn't really evolve after Indestructible. What was notable for each Rancid album is each Rancid album was an evolution from the one before it. But then after Indestructible, they kind of ran out of gas or whatever. And since then, they've just been scrambling to get back to Out Come the Wolves, and you can't go home again. And so it's not terrible. It's just, you know, I hate to say it, but I think the magic is gone. I know you're a big Rancid fan, Adam, but it's not bad. It's just not like
the world on fire. No, I mean, its greatest crime is that it's just kind of fine. And that's a damning thing for a band like Rancid, because if you go back to this day and you listen to, you know, anything from Out Come the Wolves, I mean, the reason why that record was so good, songwriting aside, is because, like, everything sounds so vital. Like, it's a long record, and you can get way deep into it, and the band never sounds like they're not, like, completely amped up the whole time. Like, they're not completely just passionately committed to whatever they're singing and playing on those individual songs. And any of this, you know, I don't question their conviction or their, you know, or their motivations or anything, but there's just, you know, there's no
fire.
There's no fire in the belly, I guess. So, you know, I am interested to hear this record, but it just, you know, the modern day Rancid stuff is all just, it's just sort of fine. And I feel like in my head, I hold them to a higher standard than just being fine. So, yeah. The Lillingtons, I was never into the Lillingtons when they were originally around. I was into Teenage Bottle Rocket quite a bit and, you know, retroactively went back and checked out Lillington stuff based on that. So to me, they suffer from being like more or less Teenage Bottle Rocket, but kind of not. like those two bands sound so close to each other that not having, you know, gone on the Lillingtons journey with them while that was an active band, I'm not appreciating what makes that band different or its own thing. It just all falls into like a Teenage Bottle Rocket context for me. And I don't think that's doing them the right amount of service. But so, you know, Tom, you said you were like a Lillingtons person, right? Like you
really, I am. I saw them this February. At Jughead from Screeching Weasel's 50th birthday party. They are awesome. Heard a couple, at least one of the new songs. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. I mean, it's only four songs, and it's been more than 10 years. But I'm not, for some reason, I have a real hard time connecting with a lot of the more modern pop punk stuff. But these guys, I love this. I love this stuff. I love the songs about aliens and Bigfoot and all that shit. I think it's great.
Do they share members with Teenage Bottle Rocket?
Yeah, the main songwriter from Teenage Bottle Rocket is Ray Carlisle.
Oh, okay.
And the Cody Templeman. Cody Templeman actually joined Teenage Bottle Rocket after their third album, was it, Adam? He was not on the first. They were a trio on the first first one or two or three Teenage Bottle Rocket albums, but they all lived in Wyoming, so they just kind of brought them aboard. And the thing, I like Teenage Bottle Rocket a lot. They are a true Ramones core band, and another one of the more modern pop punk bands that I like a lot. But there was the thing with the Lillingtons is all the songs were about like science fiction stuff and horror movie stuff, and I just always liked that more than the song about a girl stuff. Which is not, like I said, not to diss Teenage Bottle Rocket. I do like them a lot, but yeah, I hope the Lillingtons are able to do a little bit of touring. A lot of people never got to see them because they haven't been active for more than a decade, so. Good stuff.
Yeah. So there you go. Those two things came out. So that's it as far as stories and everything go. Tom, do you want to play a song before we wrap things up?
I do. You know, I'm going to go to, we were talking about music festivals, punk festivals and whatnot. I just ordered tickets for one in Milwaukee called Dumberfest that I'm pretty excited about. And it's got a lot of the modern angsty pop punk bands. The big headliners Off of Their Heads and like Copyrights, Pairs, a bunch of stuff like that. But there's one outlier band, and I can't remember if I ever played these guys on the podcast. I feel like I haven't, but they're like one of my favorite bands of all time. So anyway, the two headliners for Dumberfest in Milwaukee are Off of Their Heads and Negative Approach, the mighty Negative Approach from Detroit. And I don't know that I've ever played them on this podcast. And you kids should know what I'm talking about. And the recording's crude. It's from the early 80s, but they are, talk about intensity. I know you've seen them, John.
Twice.
Their live show is just as intense as anything you will see. It's like the singer's eyes are going to bulge out of his head, or he's going to come down the audience and start pummeling you.
It is. Anyway,
so in that spirit, we will play a song from their self-titled 7-inch, which I think came out in 80 or 81. I don't have it in front of me. But it is called their biggest hit was Can't Tell No One. So I'm not going to play that one. I'm going to play their other biggest hit, and I use the term hit loosely, obviously. It's called Ready to Fight. So here's Negative Approach with Ready to Fight, and I'll see all my Milwaukee friends at Dumberfest.
We won't take any shit.
All right, we're back. That is it. If you want to send us an email, you can do so at podcast@punknews.org, and we will hopefully get to them soon. John, and any details, anything you want to leave people with here?
We've probably already announced the two things, but I'm not going to say it right now in case we haven't. But if we have announced the two things on the website, you should all pay money for those things because they will both be awesome. I will say I liked how I was like, here's a Frank Zappa song, and then Tom's like, yeah, this is Negative Approach.
Yeah, I never could get into Zappa, man. I always meant to. I just,
dude, Frank Zappa's great, man.
I just could not get into it beyond, you know, the very commercial stuff. But yeah, to each his own.
Maybe Tom will get into Zappa, and you can find out next week on the Punk News Podcast.
This has been a Velour Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or, you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@velourundergroundstudios.com.